But we're working our way through the book of Exodus and studying Moses, one of the greatest leaders that ever lived. We've seen how God called Moses while he was taking care of the sheep for his father-in-law, Jethro. God got Moses' attention from a burning bush and gave him the task of leading the Israelites out of bondage in Egypt to the land of Canaan, which God had given to them through Abraham 400 years earlier. We've learned about the miracles that God performed in Egypt to get Pharaoh's attention and the miracles that he performed the Israelites so far in the wilderness. God has provided for them every step of the way. People have been watching what God has been doing, and the word has been spreading throughout the world. The world has traveled back to Moses' family in Midian. So in Exodus 18, we read this. Now Jethro, the priest of Midian, the father-in-law of Moses, heard of everything that God had done for Moses and for his people, Israel, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. After Moses had sent away his wife Zipporah, his father-in-law Jethro received her and her two sons. Now, if you've been with us for the whole series, you'll recall that when Moses left Midian for Egypt, he took his wife and two sons with him. But only a couple days into the journey, while they're on the way to the Egypt, his wife took the two boys and went back home to her father. And we're not going to rehash that story. You can go back and read it if you want to. We're not sure exactly why she went home. Was she mad at Moses or just because the son needed time to heal from the surgery or what? We're not sure, but she took the kids and went home. Moses has now been away from his wife and his children for probably about 6 months. He hasn't seen them. He probably doesn't expect to see them again until he's gotten safely to Canaan, because going to face the Pharaoh was a dangerous mission. Pharaoh could have at any time taken Moses' life. You don't want your wife and kids to be there when you're executed. The journey through the wilderness is going to be tough. You know, so probably part of the reason they went back is Moses probably said, you know what, I don't think you guys really want to be with me for this. Why don't you wait until I get settled in the new country, and then I'll send for you and bring you here. So he doesn't expect to see them, but Jethro, his father-in-law, decides to pay a surprise visit. Good Father's Day message, right? Father-in-law brings the wife and kids to see Moses in the wilderness, and he's not expecting them, as far as we know. He wasn't expecting them to come. They just showed up. Surprise! And Moses is thrilled to see Jethro, his wife, and his kids. So in verse 5, it says, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, together with Moses' sons and wife, came to him in the wilderness, where he was camped near the mountain of God. Jethro had sent word to him, okay, so I guess he does know, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. You guys all do that to your father-in-law today. They greeted each other and then went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law about everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and about all the hardships that they had met along the way, and how the Lord had saved them. Jethro was delighted to hear about all the good things that the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing them from the hand of the Egyptians. And he said, "Praise be to the Lord, who rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. Now we learned previously, and it said it again in this passage, Jethro, the high priest of Midian. Jethro is the priest of the Midianites. The Midianites worship many gods. As far as we know, Jethro never fully embraced the God of Moses. He accepted Moses' God and is now acknowledging that Moses' God is greater than all the other gods. You notice his words? I know now that your God, the Lord, is greater than all of the other gods. So he's acknowledged this is a true God because he's actually shown. I mean, a lot of the other gods they worship never did anything. How do you know they're a God? Because they've never said anything, they've never done anything, but we're going to worship him anyway. This God, I can actually see him in action. He is a real God. In fact, he is greater than all the other gods. He still worships the other gods, but this one, he's worth worshiping, is essentially what he's saying. He says, I know now the Lord, or what he should have said, was it said he's greater than, he should have said, I know now that the Lord is the only true God. Forget these other gods. I'm joining you with your God. But instead, he just says, he's greater. And because he's greater, I'm going to offer sacrifices to him. Jethro did what he'd always done. He offered sacrifices to gods. So he decided to offer a sacrifice to the Lord, to Moses' God. Exodus chapter 18, verse 13 says, the next day, after the sacrifices, Moses took his seat to serve as a judge for the people. And they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, what is this you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge while all these people stand around you from morning till evening? In other words, why are you doing all the work? You've got all these other people. Why aren't they doing something? Why do you have to do it all? Moses answered him, because the people have come to me to seek God's will. In other words, this is what they expect me to do. They expect me to do it, so I'm just doing it. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions. Moses' father-in-law replied, what you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice. And may God be with you. May the force be with you, the true force, the only real force. Up to this point, Moses has pretty much been a one-man show. His brother Aaron has helped a little bit, but essentially everything has started and ended with Moses. Moses is the one that talks to God, and here's what God's plan is. Moses is the one who executes God's plan. Sometimes the people follow easily. At other times, they grumble and complain because they don't like where God and Moses have led them, or they don't like the way something has been done. But have you noticed? Very rarely has anyone offered to help. Very rarely has anyone come and said, hey, Moses, that's great vision. I love what you're doing. Where can I help? What tasks can I take from you? What can I do to lighten your burden? Now, we briefly touched on the story last week at the end of chapter 17 where they had the battle with the Amalekites, and Moses, as long as his hands were raised, the Israelites were winning, but every time his hands would get tired, start drooping, they'd lose. And he got to the place where he couldn't hold his hands up anymore. So Aaron and Hur stepped in at that point and helped him. And they stood one on the right, one on the left. And they held his hands in the air. But that's the only time up to this point we've seen anything about anybody even offering to help out. It's just, Moses, you're the leader. Just do it. You take care of everything. Jethro recognizes that this is not a good thing. Moses cannot keep up the pace, and there's really no way that he can even meet the needs of all the people. I mean, it's estimated there were at least 1.5 million Jews. There were 600,000 men above the age 18 that left Egypt. Okay, that doesn't count the younger men. That doesn't count the wives and the children. So probably somewhere between 1.5 to 2 million Jews. And Moses has the responsibility for all of them. And he's doing all of the work. He's spending every waking hour listening to the people's complaints and coming up with all the solutions himself. Well, between him and God. God is helping. Maybe that comes from a slave mentality. The people have been slaves for so long, they didn't know how to think for themselves. As slaves, they only did what they were told to do. They didn't know how to take any responsibility for their own actions. It's just go do this, go do that, go make bricks, go gather straw, go build the pyramid, whatever it was they were building. God never intended for Moses to do everything. God never intends for anybody to do everything, or for anybody to do more than their share. In the New Testament, Paul describes the church as a body. He says that each person has a place in the body and each person has a job to do. When all the parts work together, things get accomplished. Great things get accomplished. But when one or two of the parts refuse to do their part, it puts extra strain on other parts, and eventually the whole body dies from exhaustion. And some of you who have certain parts of your body that aren't performing the way that they used to, and you're having to rely on other parts, you know what I'm talking about. Can you function? Yes, for a while. But you can't function as well when certain parts are having to compensate for other parts that aren't working. And eventually the whole body wears down because it's putting extra strain on those parts that weren't supposed to do all the work. That's what Jethro says to Moses when he sees what is happening. In verses 17 and 18, we read it. Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone." Studies have shown that in most churches today, all the work is being done by 10% of the people. Used to be 20% of the people, but as lives have gotten busier, people have taken on more commitments outside of the church. Most of the work in the typical church now is being done by only 10% of the people. And that's taxing. That's exhausting. That's why I believe most churches are not growing, because the people that are doing everything are already doing so much that they don't have time to really focus on they're doing so much taking care of the people they already have, they can't focus on doing what the church is really supposed to be all about, and that's reaching the people who are not part of the church yet. And so the churches are just, we got these people we got to take care of. We can't even think about bringing anybody else in. We're actually praying that nobody new comes in, because that would give us another mouth to feed. That would give us somebody else to take care of. So we're just going to work on just keeping these people happy because we don't like the grumbling and complaining. So we're going to work, hopefully not have any complaints. And if nobody complains, we've had a good day. It's been proven that the churches that are growing, the churches that are making a difference, have more people involved. The more people that get involved, the more work can be done, the fewer people are exhausted, and you actually start accomplishing everything within the walls of the church, and also can start reaching outward to bring new people into the church. God's plan was that everybody has a task. Everybody is doing something. But unfortunately, not only are the majority of the people not doing anything, they're also the ones that are usually grumbling because there's something they'd like to have done that's not being done, or they're grumbling that what is getting done is not getting done properly. So they're sitting back doing nothing, but they're grumbling that nothing's happening or not happening correctly according to them. Jethro realized that Moses would not be able to keep up that pace for much longer. He would either die of a heart attack or burn out. So Jethro gives Moses some great advice. He tells Moses to select and train other people to do part of the job. He says, you can't do this all yourself. There's 1.5 million people out there. Get some of them to do something. Verse 21, he says, select capable men from all the people. Men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. So instead of you having to do everything, you're only going to take the difficult ones. They'll handle the rest of them, which are for you. And if you read the verses before that, what Jethro told Moses, he said, you need to concentrate on your biggest responsibility. You know what Moses' biggest responsibility was? Hearing from God. He said, you need to concentrate on spending time with God, hearing the vision, so that then you can pass it down to these other people who will take the torch and carry on the vision. If you're doing the work, you don't have time to concentrate on the vision. You're the leader. You need to be hearing. And then the people need to be listening as you pass it down, and they need to be the ones that are doing, which is really the pastor's job. When we look in Ephesians, Paul gives the list of pastors, evangelists, preachers, all that kind of stuff, and he says that the job of the pastors, the job of the leaders, is to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. It's not the pastor's job to do it all. It's the pastor's job to help other people step up, catch the vision, and do the job. It's not the staff's job, because most churches now have more than just one staff. And it's too easy to say, well, that's what we pay them to do. We have a custodian, so why should I take the time to carry my bulletin to the garbage can? I'll just leave it on my seat and let him pick it up, because that's what he's getting paid for. The toilet overflowed. Where's Dennis? Why not? Hey, is there a plunger somewhere? Can I take care of that? This is my church too. Can I help out? But instead, Sunday's supposed to be his day off. But a lot of times we have to call on Dennis to go do that because, ooh, that's a dirty job. I'm not going to do it. What do you do at home when your toilet overfilled? Dennis? Honey! Toilet needs plunged again. It's our church. We all need to learn how. Now, maybe you don't know where the plunger is, okay? I understand that. But, you know, we'd be happy to find you a plunger. Where was I? That wasn't in my notes. However, I've learned that sometimes the things I say that aren't in my notes are the most inspired. But I'll leave that up to you. You can decide whether or not that was inspired or that was just Pastor Jerry venting. So let Sir, pick other people to help, and you'll only do the difficult ones. You'll be listening to God and handling the ones that are too big because, really what he's saying is, because you've got to go to God on some of those, and the people haven't learned how to go to God. So let them bring you the ones that need a God answer, and that you'll take care of those. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. If you do this and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain. And all these people will go home satisfied. Because right now, most of them aren't going home satisfied. They're coming and they're standing in line all day, waiting for a chance to get to you. And at the end of the day, they're still standing in line because there are so many things you can't take care of. Most of them are going to stand in line every day for 6 months before their need finally gets taken care of. But if you spread the load out, people can get things taken care of quicker and they'll all be satisfied. There won't be so much grumbling and complaining. Verse 24, Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything that he said. Men, there's some advice for you. Listen to your father-in-law. Sometimes he knows what he's talking about. Moses listened to his father-in-law, did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Now notice Moses is still in charge. He's still the leader. But the responsibilities have been divided up so that everyone can have their needs met in a timely manner. Instead of waiting in line all day, never making it to the front of the line, everybody gets what they need. Everyone goes home satisfied. Doesn't that sound better than all the people going home grumbling? God didn't intend for us to work alone. There was a good reason that he created Eve. He said, it is not good for man to be alone. And the task that I've given man to give of even taking care of this garden, it's too much for one person. So I am going to create a helper for him. A helper that's equal if we actually look at it. He needs somebody else to help with the work. From the very beginning, God said it's not good for anything to be done alone. No ministry in the church should be done by only one person. Everybody needs a group of people who will come alongside and help accomplish the task. When there's multiple people involved, the task gets done better. It gets done quicker. Together, everyone accomplishes more. When Jesus set out for his public ministry, one of the first things he did was select 12 men to work with him. Why? He's Jesus. He's God. Can't he do it all himself? Probably could, but he realized other people need to get involved. They need to learn how to do this because eventually I'm leaving and there needs to be somebody to carry on the ministry once I'm gone. And there were times when Jesus said, you know what? While I'm here on earth, I can only be one place at one time. And when, as God, he can be everywhere, but when he was here on earth, he could only be one place at one time. So we trained the disciples. You know what? We're going to multiply ministry. I'm going to go here, but while I'm going here, you two, you're going there, and you two are going here, and you two are going over there. We're going to go out, and we're going to cover more of the world because we're all going to be involved in the task. We're all going to do it. When you and I attempt to work for God by ourselves, we will wear out. We will burn out. Solomon said, if one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. In science, we call it synergy, which put in simple ways says this: two people can get more done by working together than by working alone on the same task. You might be able to carry 50 pounds, and I can carry 50 pounds. So if you can carry 50 and I can carry 50, combined we can carry 100, right? That's what we would think. But actually, when two people work together, they can lift more than either of them can carry alone. I heard about a horse pulling competition, or read about one as I was preparing for this message. A horse pulling competition where the first placed horse pulled roughly 5,000 pounds. The second place horse pulled approximately 4,000 pounds. After the event was over, just out of curiosity, the organizers hooked the two horses together to see how much they could pull as a unit. They're like, okay, one can pull 5, one can pull 4, so when we put them together, they're going to be able to pull 9,000 pounds. Guess what? When the horses worked together, they pulled nearly 12,000 pounds. There is power of unity, power when we come together. When we put your strength and my strength together, it becomes God's strength. Because God chips in, because God did not intend for any of us to do it alone. He said, work together, and when you work together, I will come alongside, and I will multiply your efforts, and more will be accomplished. I believe that's the reason Jesus created the church. When we become believers, we're supposed to join a congregation of believers. We're supposed to partner together with other people. And it says, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Can you be a Christian on your own? Yes, you can. It's just a decision you make. I'm going to follow Jesus. You can do it on your own, but you know what? It's a lot easier when you have people supporting you, encouraging you, sometimes prodding you. And there is no way you can accomplish the work of the kingdom by yourself. That's why he wants us to come together. Together, join our forces together to reach the world. Because when we work together, we can accomplish it. On our own, we can't. Jesus said, on this rock, the church, not an individual. I mean, he's talking to Peter, but he said, starting you, Peter, and it's going beyond you. You're going to help be the leader of this new movement, but it's going to be multiple people going out. I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not overcome it. Because there is strength when God's people work together. We are better together. When all the work is left to only a few people, we all suffer. We suffer because there are some things that simply don't get done. We suffer because things that aren't getting done as well as they could if more people were involved. Some things are getting done, but they're just not getting done correctly or as well as they could. And we suffer because eventually those who were doing all the work burn out. And when those people burn out, even the things that were being accomplished cease to be done. Right now, we're at a place in this church where we need to evaluate every ministry and decide what we can do effectively. We've got so many things that we're trying to do, and a lot of them we're doing only because that's the way they've always been done. The church has always had this, or the church has always had that. So we got to keep this thing going. We know it's not working the way it should. It's not accomplishing what it should, but we've always done it, so we're going to keep doing it. And we've got people that are getting burnt out. Some people are just walking away and say, I just can't do it anymore. I can't do this alone. We're trying to do so many things with so few leaders that nothing is being done as well as it could. We have leaders who are involved in so many different things that they're on the verge of burnout. And I know this. Because even before, as we were just starting the talks with this new insurance company, and I'm finding out that we're going to have more people to make our children's ministries work the way they want it to work. We're going to have to recruit more leaders. We don't have enough leaders to have two teachers in every class. And as I'm going through this, then at the same time, I've got leaders coming to me and saying, I need a break this summer. I'm exhausted. I want to spend some time and go see some family. I want to take some vacation. But right now, there's nobody because we have no substitutes. That's why we do holiday schedule on holidays. Because on holidays, our regulars want to go camping. They want to do what a lot of the rest here are doing. But they feel they can't go because if they go, there's nobody to cover them in their class. So we've started saying, you know what? You need a vacation. You need a break. We're just going to go holiday schedule. There's going to be no Sunday school. There's going to be no evening. We're going to do Sunday morning only. We're going to pool our resources together, use those that we do have here, and we're going to cover the things that absolutely have to get covered, and we're going to give you the freedom to go without feeling guilty because you can't be here. Well, I had all these leaders coming and saying, you know, this summer I need 3 Sundays off or I need 4 Sundays off. Or some of them saying, you know, I could really use a break for the whole summer. I'm just exhausted. Could I just have the whole summer off? I said, okay, we need more workers, but you guys need a break. How are we going to make this all work? We have leaders who are involved in so many different things that are on the verge of burnout. Meanwhile, we have others that come every week that aren't involved anywhere. They come, they sit. A lot of them go back and say, man, that was a great service. But they didn't help with the service. And some of them go away and say, man, I wish it would have been done differently. We need every part of the body to do its part. Some parts may need to discover what their job is. Maybe somebody's out there and says, you know what, I'd like to be involved. I just don't know what to do. Well, talk to us. We'd be happy to help you figure out where you fit in. But everybody has a spot. Everybody has giftings that God has given you. You have passions that God has given you. Let us help you discover what those are and help you figure out. Because if you're not doing your job, somebody else has to try to do it. And they can't do your job as well as you could. Some parts have been idle for so long, they might need to be retrained or rehabilitated. They used to do it, but they haven't done it for so long that they've just lost the strength. They need to be re-strengthened. But if we're going to move forward, we are going to need more people involved. When it comes to our children's and youth ministries, we need more people involved simply because the insurance company will not allow us to do what we've been doing. We have to have more people. And even without the insurance company, we've got leaders that need reinforcements. There are other things in the church we need. And I didn't ask anybody if I could talk about this. Let me just give you an example. Justin, now he is getting a small salary from the church. Not much, okay? Probably won't even cover his groceries for the month. But he is getting a little bit. But Justin leads worship Sunday morning and Sunday night. He helps with youth, does worship, but other things with youth on Tuesday nights. He helps with youth on Wednesday nights. He's part of young adults on Thursday nights. And on Friday nights, he leads a Bible study. That means he has one night to concentrate on his family. He's recently married. Is one night a month enough to really establish a great lifelong relationship? Now, Justin hasn't complained, but I know it's not good for him. And so I've been talking, Justin, we got to get you out of something, but how do we take him out of some of those things unless somebody else steps forward to take some of those things? Those things need to be done. So somebody's got to come in and fill some of those spots. Last Sunday, Spencer taught Sunday school at 9:45. Then he helped in kids' church at 10:45, but he had to serve communion because he's on the board, and we've always had this policy that the board members are the ones that serve communion, and two of our board members are already involved up here on worship team, so they're already out of the picture. So somebody else had to go up cover for him for 15 minutes so that he'd come down and do communion and then go back up to help in kids' church again. Why weren't there enough people that Spencer could have just done this and not had to do two? Again, Spencer didn't complain. But if everybody was involved, we wouldn't have people having to do everything. All of our worship team is also involved in a Sunday school class or doing something else. So they're rushing from worship to do that and then rushing back. And some, they've said, you know what? We don't feel like we actually have time to really get our hearts in tune to be ready because we're rushing from one thing to the other so fast. And we don't have time to really talk to people and build relationships because we're doing everything. It shouldn't be that way. So we're looking hard at ministries, what ministries are important, what ministries can we do without. Basically what we're doing, and I've told a few people, right now I'm considering Central Assembly a church plant. We are a brand new church just starting out. What can we do with the number of leaders we have? What can we do with the amount of finances we have? And new churches starting out, they don't have all of these things going on through the week. New churches, when they first start out, they have Sunday morning only. That's all they have. And then as they grow and they start getting more people involved and the money starts coming, then they add, you know, a children's ministry, they add a youth ministry, they add these other programs. We're trying to do too many things that we can't do any of them well. So we're going to be reevaluating every ministry. We're going to be reevaluating schedules. We're going to say, what can we do with the resources that we have? So for the summer, we're going to be cutting way back. Because we're also all trying to do all that. We've already started we're doing this platform remodel, and I've asked for people to come and give extra time towards that. And people say, man, I'm already so exhausted. I'd love to help with that, but I can't do another night. I can't do this. I can't do that. So, you know, we need to do this too. So for the summer, next week will be the last Sunday. Now, we've already talked to the children's leaders and the youth leaders and all this kind of stuff. And next Sunday will be our last Sunday for Sunday school. Okay? We're not saying this is forever, but we need time to rebuild, to get more people in, to reinforce. So starting the 26th, and why are we doing it the 26th instead of waiting until July? Well, we were going to wait until July and just do this for July and August. But when we started talking about it, I had half of our Sunday school teachers say, man, I'm going to be gone on the 26th anyway. Can we just start it the week earlier? Because, you know, I was already trying to figure out. So, yeah, great. We'll start a week earlier. So starting the 26th, it'll be 10:45 service. And then we'll come back Sunday night for our Sunday night worship and prayer. However, in July and August, we're going to do another seminar. You guys remember the Not a Fan that we did? And a lot of people are saying, when can we do something like that? That was so great. I learned so much. When can we do something else like that? So for July and August, actually I'll start mid-July because we want to get through the 4th of July weekend, we're going to do another one of those on Sunday night. So we'll still have church on Sunday night, but it'll be that format again. I encourage you to come. It's going to be a great study. We'll all benefit. But that's going to give our worship team a little bit more break this summer. They won't have to do worship both Sunday morning and Sunday night, so they can relax a little bit. They can come and just actually be fed and not have to plan worship, not have to be here early to practice another set of worship. Okay, so we'll have Sunday morning, we'll have Sunday night. Now, actually, our two adult classes have decided they still want to meet, okay? And one of them may be meeting earlier because they've said, you know what, we don't have enough time to really fellowship and stuff. In 45 minutes, we can't do just our, you know, we can't fellowship and do teaching and all kinds of stuff. They were talking about maybe, you know, since we no longer have a Sunday school hour, they can meet anytime they want to. So I don't know what they're going to talk about this morning. They actually may come earlier, still get together for their fellowship, for their teaching. So they're still going to meet. The dilemma is, there are a few people in those classes that have kids. We don't have kids Sunday school for the summer because we're giving our teachers a break, so we're not sure exactly what to do with that part. And if God's saying, laying on your heart right now, saying you need to help with the summer, come talk to me, okay? We've got a place for you, but unless we get that piece in place, you know, they'll still have their thing. They just won't have something for the kids at that time. There will be somewhere for the kids during the 10:45 service, okay? So you're not going to have the kids screaming next to you during service, although that works for a lot of churches. There's a lot of churches don't have any of your kids. Kids come to I'm not even totally opposed to that. It's just we've got to adjust if it goes to that, okay? So Sunday morning, Sunday night, and for the summer, we're canceling all of our midweek. Some of the ministers will still be doing activities. Youth are still going to do some activities. Young adults are still going to do some activities. Children's, they're trying to put together a few activities. But as far as the regular Wednesday night, Royal Rangers, Missionettes, youth, all those are taking a break. They're talking during the summer. What can they do? How can they restructure the program where they can have two? We may have to combine our two groups of Royal Rangers together so that we always have two Royal Ranger leaders in there because right now they each have their own class. We may have to combine all of them, not have Royal Ranger Missionettes, have all the kids combined together. We have to do what we have to do. Part of that is having some of you step up and say, you know what? I'm ready to get involved. I'll help with kids. I'll help in the nursery, you know? I play an instrument, and I've been hiding my talent because that's really where we're low is on the instruments. That's our real weakness in the worship. Everybody has a part. Worship team, you can make your way back up here. Everybody is part of the body. And my expectation, the board's expectation, if you choose to be here, because I know some of you are still checking the church out, seeing if you want to be involved, I want you to know what we expect. We can't force it. But our expectation is that everybody will be involved in a ministry, not just attending, but everybody will be involved in a ministry. If everybody in this room was doing something, everything would get done, and we wouldn't be burning people out. Does everybody understand? Nobody mad at me? I'm just teaching the word the way God set it up to be. You guys can do with what you want to do. So it was just kind of fitting that our passage in Exodus on the life of Moses kind of fit in with what we needed to talk about today anyway. We're not shutting the church down. We're going to keep moving forward. But we've got to be smart in how we do it. And we've got to reevaluate, restructure, and only do what we can do well.